A Mucky Business with Tim Farron.
Hello, I'm Tim Farron, and welcome to the show which delves into the mucky business of politics through the eyes of Christians. But you might well think that politics is tainted by compromise and sin, and you would, of course, be right, but so is everything else. And I think we should be praying in an informed way for our brothers and sisters who operate in the world of politics. Today, we begin a series where we'll be hearing from those attending the party conferences. We start with Liberal Democrat MP Muneera Wilson, who I had the privilege of chatting to here at Lib Dem Conference in Bournemouth. We'll hear about how she came to find Jesus, having been brought up in a Muslim home, and how she's seen God at work through her role as an MP. But before that, a few days ago, the Prime Minister's new climate change plans hit the headlines. Following leaked reports, he announced that the government will now proceed more slowly than planned with the UK's strategy to reach net zero emissions by 2050. Let's establish some of the basics. Net zero, of course, is shorthand for the target to reduce the emission of greenhouse gases, such as carbon dioxide and methane, into the atmosphere until we are no longer adding to what is already there. This will include measures such as offsetting emissions, as well as capturing and storing them underground. The aim is to stop the global temperature rising beyond 1.5 degrees by 2100, which is seen by scientists to be a tipping point, beyond which we will see even more severe droughts, rainfall and heat waves across the planet. Measures that Britain has committed to putting in place include banning the sale of new petrol and diesel cars, replacing gas boilers with heat pumps, and a requirement on landlords to make their properties more energy efficient. The Prime Minister's reasoning is that the UK has progressed faster on meeting its targets than other nations, and therefore we can afford to slow down a bit because these changes are simply too expensive for households to implement within proposed timescales. In his speech, Rishi Sunak said, "Too often, motivated by short-term thinking, politicians have taken the easy way out." You see, my concern, though, is that he's doing just that. A general election is on the horizon, and the Conservatives are doing really badly in the polls. A number 10 insider was quoted as saying that the purpose of the speech was to create dividing lines with Labour. In other words, an attempt to appeal to those who voted for the Conservatives in 2019. Predictably, there was an explosion of reaction from all sides of the debate. The Express newspaper welcomed the implication that the nation won't and can't pay the net zero bill, while Gavi Hinsliff in The Guardian called it a shameful climb down. Environment groups were dismayed, and businesses called for, in the words of Ford's chief executive, ambition, commitment and consistency as part of a clear long-term strategy. Others have been quick to ramp up the culture wars, either welcoming the move against the ideological eco-zealots, that's the Daily Mail, and the furious blob, that's from the Telegraph, or condemning the move as reckless and opportunistic, trashing what's left of Britain's reputation abroad, so said Polly Toynbee in The Guardian. Ian Duncan-Smith tweeted that the government needs to be open about the cost of moving to net zero, and they recognise the need to get there without an ideology that places huge burdens on the taxpayer. But the reality is that tackling these issues are burdensome, and the further we push them into the future, the more costly they become. The challenge we face on climate change is monumental. The long-term cost will be seen in terms of loss of lives and livelihoods, homes and habitats. Ultimately, it is not about a zealous eco-ideology, but based on the reality of what we are already seeing. How can we apply Christian principles to this issue? Well, there are no easy answers. There are trade-offs and nuances that get lost in the political knockabout. We are commanded to care for God's creation, to act as stewards on his behalf, but we are also told not to place too many burdens on the poor. We can play our individual parts, but we elect government and leaders to make decisions in the best interests of all, not simply based on the electoral cycle. It is at government and corporation levels that the change has to be driven. We cannot pretend the solutions are cheap or straightforward, but also we cannot hide behind ideology and slogans. So let's pray for real wisdom for our leaders and a reminder that every human being, whether they come from Newcastle or Nairobi or New Delhi, is made in the image of God. We cannot ignore the fact that those in the poorest parts of the world are the most affected by the choices that we make. Let's also pray for positive solutions, not just a litany of doom and gloom, to engage those who do not yet see this as an important issue compared with the struggles of daily life, or those who are simply overwhelmed by the enormity of the task. We know that God has chosen to engage with his creation and to remake the whole world from within. He calls us to be part of his plan.
A Mucky Business with Tim Farron.
Well, next to our guest, Muneera Wilson, Member of Parliament for Twickenham. I think this is about my 63rd conference, but it's the first one we've ever done a Mucky Business at. So congratulations on being our first guest live at Lib Dem conference. How are you?
Yes, very well. Slightly croaky. I was DJing last night at Lib Dem Disco and ripping up the dance floor till about 12:30, 12:45.
So that gives our listeners a little bit of a clue about what party conference might be like. So discos, MPs being DJs.
Yeah, so we do lots of serious stuff as well. And I made, you know, 2 speeches yesterday. But also we get to have fun with our friends and colleagues and acquaintances.
Well, we always start these interviews with the big stuff. Yeah. So you're a Christian. Tell me how that happened.
Well, I grew up in an Ismaili Muslim family and was practicing until I was about 16, 17. And for some reason, you know, something was triggered and I started to lose my faith and questioning it and engaging with it less. By the time I went to university, I'd say I definitely believed in God, but didn't have a faith. I've never, ever doubted the presence of God. At university, I met and became friends with some Christians who started sharing their faith with me. And at the same time, I was going through some various challenging things in my personal life, mainly at home. And I started exploring with them. There was a big mission at Cambridge that year where I was given a copy of John's Gospel in my kitchen, and I read it and I was like, well, I've read all this stuff before, there's nothing new here, you know. I did RE at school, at GCSE and whatnot, but I started something similar to an Alpha course type thing that they were running through one of the churches, and then reading some more, and then there were various difficult moments that happened and I didn't quite know how to react. And the one night when one of these difficult moments was happening, I prayed and things got better. And then there was another night when similarly, it was a difficult situation. And I just felt a real sense of the presence of God in the room and sort of gave my life at that moment. And it wasn't straightforward after that. Obviously, it's quite difficult coming from that background. Some very challenging discussions with family members. And really hard. It's one of the reasons, actually, talking about it in this way to date, I haven't done so publicly, and it's still quite hard to do because, you know, out of respect for my family, because they are still practicing, and you know, my mum in particular really, really struggles with that choice that I made, which was more than 23 years ago, 25 years ago now.
Well, we appreciate you doing so, and so it feels almost clunky to then just move on to politics, having shared that. And if we had more time, we'd go a lot more deep than we just have done. But at some point, politics became a feature in your life. How did that happen?
Well, I first got interested in politics when I studied A-level politics at school. And I remember having this sort of passing thought, oh, it'd be really cool to be an MP one day. But particularly after I'd visited Parliament with my local MP. But I just thought, oh, well, you know, that's, well, how could somebody like me possibly ever become an MP, and didn't think anything more of it, and went off to university, wasn't involved in politics at that point. And it was as a graduate, when I was in my graduate job, which I hated and was very bored in, and was a trainee tax consultant. There were lots of different issues at the time that I was getting quite exasperated with the then Labour government about. And I guess it was the Iraq war that tipped me over the edge. And actually, it was one of my friends at church at the time who said to me, Muneera, stop shouting at the television, get off your backside and go do something about it. And that's when I joined the Lib Dems and got involved.
And you ended up on a local council? Where was that?
Yeah, well, so that was when I was living in North London, where at the time there wasn't a very active party. It was one of those classic moments. I turned up to a local party meeting and ended up on the executive by the end of the meeting. I was really grappling with my career at that time, and I was bored, demotivated, praying for some opportunities, and started applying for Lib Dem jobs, and actually ended up with no experience getting a job to go and run a campaign in one of the most marginal Liberal Democrat seats in the country in the 2005 election in Guildford. So that's where I cut my campaigning teeth. And then by the time that job finished, I'd met my now husband, who got a job working for Twickenham and Richmond Liberal Democrats, which is why I moved when I came back to London, I moved to Twickenham because the Lib Dems were strong there. And then I thought, well, it'd be lovely to try and stand for council and get a bit of experience of elected office that way and represent my local community. So I was a councillor in West Twickenham in the London Borough of Richmond, 2006 to 2010.
Marvellous. So let's fast forward now to 2019.
Yeah.
There's a general election. Vince Cable had been the MP on and off, but mostly on since 1997, regaining the seat in 17, having lost it in 15. At what point did he announce his intention to retire? And then were you immediately of the view, this is my moment?
So it was the middle of the summer holiday. Yeah. I don't think my family would thank me for the fact that our entire summer holiday was then taken over with me preparing my selection campaign. Yeah. I'd had a bit of a heads up. I mean, with all the political turmoil, obviously this was at the height of the Brexit years and May being ousted as PM and so on. So it looked like a general election was on the cards. And having been in and around the Twickenham area and been elected and a very active member and having a good relationship with Vince, I'd had a quiet chat with him. So I knew there was a possibility. And then it eventually all came about in the August. And because we were expecting an election very, very soon, I was selected in the September. And we had an election in December. So it was very, very whirlwind. And frankly, it was an amazing and divine sort of timing for me, because if it hadn't been that quick, given that I was in a pretty high flying corporate job by this point, I had two very young children. Yeah. They were 1 and 5 at the time. I couldn't have taken on being a parliamentary candidate for a top seat for a period of time. Yeah. I could only do it for a few months. So it worked out very well for me personally in terms of the timing.
Brilliant. You get elected in 2019.
Yeah.
It's great for you.
Yeah.
I scraped back as well. Good for me.
Well done, Tim.
Only 11 of us. We'd hope for a lot better.
I know.
Then happened. Boris Johnson majority. And then within weeks, you were into the plague. So what was it like being a new MP against the backdrop of all of that?
I struggle to find the adjectives, Tim, because often when people ask me about it, that's exactly what I say. There are no adjectives to describe how utterly overwhelming it was. As you say, I'd only been an MP maybe 3 months. And as you did, as we all did, at a local level in the constituency, we were all overwhelmed with casework and inquiries because people were terrified, or, you know, so many loopholes in the support schemes and all the rules and so on. So we were overwhelmed at a local level. And then here's me, you know, new BMP, having to challenge the health secretary, one Matt Hancock.
Yes.
And thrown into having to do national media very, very regularly, sometimes speaking straight after those big press conferences on COVID on the BBC News channel, and having to go toe-to-toe with Hancock in the House of Commons every other day on the latest statement and question. It was overwhelming. And I think before the first lockdown, when there was a lot of controversy that we weren't locking down soon, even though I was just the Lib Dem health spokesperson and in reality had no influence on the situation, I felt such a huge burden of responsibility. In fact, our York conference, you might remember, the spring conference was cancelled.
Yes.
Because of COVID, but before lockdown. And I was in York with my family because we had accommodation booked and on conference calls. And I just couldn't sleep because I was just like, God, you put me in this position. I don't know what to do. I'm really new to this. I don't have the advisors. I don't know what I should be saying.
Yeah.
And I felt a real, real sense of responsibility. And particularly when we had those big votes on, you know, various measures and lockdowns. I remember almost being in tears with the November lockdown, because I felt that the government had really squandered the gains we'd made through the first big lockdown. And I felt morally very conflicted because I wanted to protect people. But equally, I felt we shouldn't have to be in that position. It was one of the hardest votes I've had to do.
A Mucky Business with Tim Farron.
We're talking to Muneera Wilson, Liberal Democrat Education Spokesperson and Member of Parliament for Twickenham. So you are Education Spokesperson now.
Yeah.
You were our Health Spokesperson during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And but education clearly massively matters to you.
Yeah.
We spoke here at conference yesterday. We just do as we're told by Ed Davey. That's how it works, isn't it? I'm the Farming and Rural Affairs and Environment Spokesperson, but we do get a choice to say yes.
It's handy
or not
when you represent the Lake District.
Lots of farms.
Not so much Twickenham.
Yeah, but nevertheless, it's a brief that you clearly relish.
I love it.
So tell us my education.
I mean, it's the is the brief that I would always want, I always wanted to do and always want to do. And, you know, in my dream world, I would be education secretary one
there
day.
There we are.
But I'm really passionate about it, partly, and I said this in my keynote speech yesterday, education and the importance of education was absolutely drummed and instilled into me at a very young age by my, particularly by my dad, but both my parents, as is often the case, particularly for children of immigrants who, you know, want to see their children make a better life for themselves than they were able to. Mm-hmm. But also if we think about it from a faith perspective, you know, the Bible does talk about children quite a lot. Mm-hmm. And actually how, you know, Jesus puts children on a pedestal quite often, and asks people not to hinder children coming to him.
Yeah.
And we're asked as well to look after the widows and the orphans. And I feel really strongly that, you know, children are a blank canvas when they're born. And all of us have, you know, something God-given that's so special in us. And unfortunately, circumstances and the environment means that for so many that is never drawn out and it's never allowed to flourish. And I feel very strongly that, you know, it's our mission as liberals,
yeah,
to make sure that we do everything that we can to enable every person to really achieve their potential. Because that's what we're about, yeah, as liberals, right? It's not just about education. It's about all the other support that goes in around children, particularly those who've been through trauma, and making sure that they're taken care of and given the very best start in life.
Which kind of leads me to ask you about a case which I know is really, really close to you. So you're a constituency member of Parliament, yeah, as well as spokesperson for the Liberal Democrats on education. There's a particular case I witnessed you pursuing doggedly over months relating to a family in Afghanistan. Tell me about it.
So I have a constituent whose brother was shot dead by the Taliban about 6 months after the fall of Kabul. He was a British citizen, dual national, and he had five children, four girls and a boy, and an Afghan wife. And obviously he was shot dead. He was targeted by the Taliban. They were at huge risk. They went into hiding. We fought to make sure that the children got British passports because they were eligible because their father was a British citizen. And so then my next mission was to get British children out of Afghanistan. Particularly, we got four girls who couldn't access education, and all were at risk. And I felt I met barrier after barrier from the Home Office, which I fought. And finally, we got, after 18 months, we got a little opening. The Foreign Office didn't help us out. My constituent took his life in his own hands, went to Afghanistan to try and help get them out via Pakistan to get a visa. Anyway, as I was knocking on doors to try and get the Foreign Office to make sure that they got the visa when he was there and got them home safely, I was out and about and I saw this sign as I was walking to speak at a conference in Liverpool. And the sign had the family surname, which I'm not going to say to protect their safety because there's still a family member left behind. And as I was walking, I really felt God say to me, Munira, stop trying to do this all in your own strength. I've got them. You've done everything you can. This is not for your own glory.
Mm.
This is not about you.
Mm.
I care about them a lot more than you. And about half an hour later, I got a message from my constituency caseworker to say they'd got the visa in Pakistan. Then we didn't hear anything from them. And then about 10 days later, we got calls saying they're at Heathrow. It was one of those moments where I just was like, wow. Like I fought and fought and fought. And the previous Sunday I'd been crying in church because I'd heard that he couldn't get a visa at the Pakistan embassy in Kabul, which is why he then had to take his life into his own hands and take the mother to Islamabad. And I was just like, God, what are you doing?
Mm.
And then after that, I had this moment, as I say, when I just saw their name up on a board and very clearly spoken to in that way. And he did the rest. And it's just a lesson that I have to keep learning throughout my life, that I always try and do things in my own strength. I'm very determined. I work incredibly hard and I'm all about achievement. And I have to keep learning that lesson that actually God's in charge and he does the hardest bit.
Listeners, we're welling up here in Bournemouth, literally. There's no telly, but you have to trust us. Munira, we've come to the end of our time. There's loads more I could ask you, but it's been a real blessing to have you with us. Thank you very much for everything you do, for your community, for Lib Dems, and for your public witness. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Well, each week we give you the opportunity for you to ask any question you'd like about this mucky business of politics. It could be how an aspect of this world impacts on us Christians who work within it, or maybe there's a particular issue that you're struggling to make sense of. But I'd love to hear from you and to attempt an answer. So please drop me an email to farren@premier.org.uk. Now, this week, John's been in touch and he asks, what do you think Christian leaders in churches can learn from Christian leaders in politics? And what can Christian leaders in politics learn from Christian leaders in churches? There's a whole essay, John, that I could deploy to answer that. So let's try and keep it simple and make some assumptions. Maybe the thing that Christian leaders in churches might struggle with the most is that they are less engaged with the world than Christian leaders in politics. And maybe the problem that Christian leaders in politics struggle with is that we are maybe sometimes too much involved in the world. And so I think Christian leaders in churches can therefore learn something from Christian leaders in politics about how we engage with those people who are not Christians, how we understand the language whilst not compromising in our faith. And what I think Christian leaders in politics need to do is keep listening to good teachers, good Christian teachers, to be in good Christian fellowship. As I often say, the two great challenges that face Christians when it comes to politics is that we either blend in or we hide away. If you blend in, you lose your saltiness and are not faithful. If you hide away, you'll have no impact upon the world. And all of us need to learn from each other as how we make sure we avoid those two traps.
If you have a question for Tim, email farren@premier.org.uk.
Well, thanks so much for joining us for this week's show. Let's end together in prayer. Well, loving Heavenly Father, we thank you for this time with you, and we thank you for Mayor Wilson and the thing that she really drew our attention to, which is that it's so easy to rest in our own strength and so easy often to forget that we need to rest in yours. I pray for all those attending party conferences, whether they are councillors, regular members, members of parliament, wannabe members of parliament, that they would recognise that they would understand that resting in your strength is the key to being able to access a wonderful relationship with you, being humble to others and to you, Lord. And we just pray for the party conference season as it rolls on, that you bless the Christian organisations, Christians on the left, Lib Dem Christian Forum and the Conservative Christian Fellowship, that they would be strong witnesses to your truth in the settings that you've put them. We ask all these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, don't forget, you can catch up on past episodes, which feature interviews with party leaders, former government ministers and MPs from all the major parties. Just search for A Mucky Business on your chosen podcast provider or head to premier.plus/A Mucky Business. Thanks ever so much for being with us.
Lowe sabe que ahora más que nunca buscas el precio más bajo. Por eso, cuenta con nuestra garantía de precios bajos para obtener lo que necesitas a precios competitivos para tus proyectos. Y si encuentras un artículo igual a un precio más bajo que califica, te lo igualaremos. Lowe's. Nosotros ayudamos. Tú ahorras. Igualación de precio aplica al artículo igual con un precio actual en tiendas calificadas. Aplican términos y exclusiones. Detalles en lowes.com/garantía precios bajos.